Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Stephen the Warman Wright's Kickfighting Podcast Show. As a Christian man, one of my favorite heroes in the fight sport was Mike Bernardo because, you know, he shared, you know, Christian faith. He was such a good guy. And even though there are people of different faiths or who don't have, you know, aren't, you know, particularly the strongest spiritual people, everyone liked Mike Bernardo. He was just a good person, you know, the kind of guy who would do, you know, do things, you know, do anything for you. He's very helpful. Everybody who knew him in the K1 scene, everyone who I met outside of, you know, the K1 arena, anybody who'd ever come in contact with him thought he was a great person. At the age of 42, he is no longer with us. His death, you know, actually came as a surprise to me. Out of all the people, you know, in the K1 scene who I would have thought would have struggled in their after K1 life, you know, I thought that Mike would have been okay. But, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover. We all have our struggles and we all have our things that we deal with. Joining me today is former K1 fighter, former awesome boxer, and, you know, winding down a very spectacular career. Virgil Calacuta is with us. Virgil, can you say what's up to the people?
Howdy. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, well, Virgil, let's go ahead and talk about Mike. First, talk about your first experience with meeting Mike and your father training him and so on.
That's taking me back a couple of years, I'm saying. I think I was my dad and Mike. They actually met when Mike was in, I don't know, many people don't know this. Mike was in the South African Defence Force. He was in the Navy, and that's when he met my dad. As my dad was a personal trainer in the Navy. That was, I think, in the late 80s. I think. So I was really small. I was maybe what. 10 years old, 10, 11, 12. Uh-huh. That's about the time I met Mike Bernardo. And long story short, my dad, you know, thought he had potential to become a boxer. And they started training in the Navy in the late 80s, I think.
Cool. Well, could you tell us, once you got older, do you have any memories of Mike or any funny stories or something that would tell the people a little bit more about who he was, outside of just the guy who was an awesome puncher that we saw in the K1 in the 90s.
Well, you know, myself and Mike were pretty close. A boxing story I can relate to is when I decided to pursue a career in professional fighting, I did some sparring with Mike, you know, and obviously Mike is a heavyweight. He's much better than me, and he was supposed to just go nice and easy with me, which he started out doing. And I think I caught him with a good blow, and then, you know, he sort of just wanted to put me on my place just to show me, you know, who I'm sparring with. And he threw a nice big left hook on me and knocked me down in sparring. And a story not related to boxing. You know, when he beat Andy Hart the first time, that's when he announced himself to the world. Mm-hmm. You know, on the K1 stage. And, you know, he came back from Japan, he came back to South Africa, and he bought me some cool sneakers and T-shirts. And that was the relationship that myself and Mike had. You know, he was like a big brother to me.
So tell us about, you know, what went through your mind the moment you heard that this had happened. You are now located in, you know, Sydney, Australia, so you're not, you know, back where you were born. Could you just tell us about, you know, what went through your mind, you know, if there's any phone calls you made or just, you know, anything that you can share. You don't have to share everything.
Look, what I can share is that, like you just mentioned, I'm now living and based in Sydney, Australia. So I haven't seen Mike for a year or 2 years, I think, now. I haven't seen him. I've been in contact with him, though, on Facebook. But what I can say is that the past 2 years, he's been going through a lot of emotional difficulties. You know, I can't really divulge too much. Mm-hmm. But he was just going through a really depressing time in his life the last 2 years. I got the news about his death the morning of his death. I got a text from my mother, my mom, as Mike was very close with my mom and dad, as you know, my dad being Mike's trainer for all these years.
Yeah, definitely sad to hear that. You know, moving forward, I saw your post on Facebook and just kind of telling people, you know, about Mike and about, you know, what had happened. You know, moving forward, is there any advice that you could give to people who are in the fight sports? Because, you know, it is a tough sport and you know, it takes a lot of physical damage. And, you know, sometimes, you know, they're doing, you know, tests and science to say that concussions result in, and, you know, people having very tough lives when they get older. But you, as a person who pursued the fight sport, could you just first tell people about, you know, how you guys as fighters, you know, make the decision that you're going to be really different kind of humans by going into the fight sports, but also tell them of, you know, how they can take care of themselves, tell them, you know, how you're rooted in your family. How important is it to be stable outside of the ring as well as inside of the ring?
Well, what I can say, Stephen, again, not wanting to divulge too much about Mike, is to, A, have a backup plan. You know, you can't just fight. Not everyone makes it in fighting. That's the reality of what we do. Maybe 20% of the guys that decide to become professional fighters, maybe 20% of them make it. So what I will say is, please make sure you educate yourself, get a academic qualification in some trade or profession, so that you're not reliant on boxing. And then you know, again, not wanting to divulge too much about Mike. In his heyday, in what they call the K-1 golden era, Mike financially made a lot of money. And so I would say that, you know, if you get to the position where you become a really famous fighter or a world champion and you're making a lot of money, you know, it can be very, very overwhelming. So I think you just need to have a strong support base around you, because it can be very intimidating, you know, just all of a sudden your life just changing overnight and you have all these fans, people wanting a piece of you, and all this money you have as well can be very daunting. So have a good support base around you.
You are one of the people who have a good support base around you. Two sons, I believe.
Yes, I do.
And you've been married for quite a while. Could you, and you don't have to tell us too much about your personal business, but just tell us about what keeps you rooted outside of your fight career.
Look, Stephen, myself, I'm a Christian as well. And, you know, I believe I don't really go out there as lots of celebrity sportsmen or celebrities. You know, some of them go out and make a stand that they believe in Christ. Myself, personally, I don't. I try and just live my life to please Christ, and let people see the way I live my life. Let that draw them, you know, to asking me why I am the way I am. And I use that as a means to then minister the gospel to them. But, you know, I've obviously that's a big factor in the little bit of success that I've achieved thus far, that I'm rooted in Christ. And obviously, you know, I have a very, very supportive wife. You know, fighters will understand, when it comes to when you're preparing for a fight and you're cutting weight, you become really moody and you become the worst of persons. And my wife is, thankfully, she's stuck around and she's still with me through all of that. So I will say that my wife has been a rock solid foundation in my life as well.
So tell us about relocating to Sydney. I remember on the forums when you first mentioned that you were going out to Sydney, just to pursue, a fight career. You just to focus on, training, being a kickboxer and having more fight opportunities because, Australia really does a good job of putting on a lot of boxing shows, a lot of kickboxing shows, Muay Thai shows. Yeah. Tell us about, your first trip there, and then tell us about what made you want to move to Australia.
My first trip was in 1996, and a funny story is that I actually accompanied Carl Bernardo, Mike's younger brother, and he fought Sam Greco, and I was actually in his corner for the fight. Unfortunately, he lost, so that was my very first experience of Australia, but I made the move to Australia to pursue my career in 2009. And I did that because, South Africa has produced Mike Bernardo, but not many top fighters because we don't have the best of facilities. So I always felt at a disadvantage. And so I was in contact, in fact, with Ian Schaffer. I'm sure you know Ian Schaffer.
Yes.
I was in contact with him, and he put me in contact with a guy by the name of Tony Dalvecchio. We liaised, via emails, and I then just booked myself a flight and came over, landed in Sydney, and started training here and fell in love with the place. And at this time, I was married at this time, obviously, and I had my two kids at the time who were back home in South Africa. And I just thought that this would be not just for me, I thought it would be a good place for my kids and my wife as well. And I then stayed 2009. I stayed for the year, went back home at the end of 2009, went back home and did some, worked on my paperwork and came back up at the end of 2010 with my whole family.
Nice. So tell us a little bit about, you said the facilities that you trained, that you guys didn't have the best of facilities or maybe even the best of training opportunities in South Africa. A lot of people don't realize just what the gym looked like when Mike Bernardo got started. Could you tell people a little bit about what that place looked like?
I mean, look, to be honest, we've obviously moved on since then. Mike started out in my dad's garage. And it was, I would say, 5 meters by 20 meters. It was not a good, a very big space. A couple of bags were just stuck up in there. And, at the time, Dwayne van der Merwe, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he fought Ernesto Hoos, I think.
Yeah.
He fought something. Dwayne was a Mike sparring partner, and then an opportunity came. This is just when the K1, I think it was 1996, when they were starting to establish themselves, and they were looking for a heavyweight, and my dad managed to make contact, and that's when Mike got the opportunity, and we were sparring. I mean, Mike was sparring in the garage, little garage, got the opportunity to fight Andy Hug, went over, knocked Andy out, and as you know, the rest is history, and obviously, with his success came financial security as well, and we were able then to move to a bigger facility, bigger gym with a ring and better facilities.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about you and in K1. Just tell us about how that opportunity came up, and just tell us, what you enjoyed about it, and maybe even what you miss about it.
Look, as you know, I started out boxing,
mm-hmm.
and when I turned professional in 1996. And that's when Mike made it big in Japan. So I was boxing, and Mike was the premier fighter in the gym at the time as he was fighting in K1. So I was always around K1, and I always knew about, what's happening because I was following Mike, of course. And I think it was in late, I'm not sure, I think 2001, 2002, one of the Japanese promoters was in South Africa with Mike, and I happened to have a boxing fight this particular night, and he saw me, And he mentioned to me, he approached me and explained to me that they're starting this K1 Max and would I be interested in fighting. At the time, I was boxing and didn't really know much about K1 Max. As I just mentioned, you know, it was just starting there. So I declined the first time. And then the same guy stayed in contact, obviously, with my dad. And then I just decided, you know, I was getting frustrated with boxing. And I just decided to take the opportunity. And I remember my first fight, not knowing a thing about K1 and K1 Max for that matter. My first fight was against Albert Krauss, and the rest is history.
Yeah, and that was a entertaining fight. It's funny, you know, as your career went on, in the beginning you were all boxing, but then the kick came and you started to get better and better with every route, you know, with every fight. You know, last question on K1, what would you say was your most memorable fight there?
My most memorable fight and the fight that the K1, fighting in the K1 Max, everyone is good. You know, there is no easy fight. Everyone is good. The fight I most regret is the Andy Sauer fight.
Yes.
Because I was ill-advised, and I don't want to make any excuses, but I was given sleeping tablets, sleeping pills the night before the fight, and I took them. And when I fought Andy, I remember the first round, I knocked him down, and straight after that, my body just shut down. I just couldn't do anything. And that's the fight I most regret, because I do feel that I would have won that fight.
Okay. Well, you know, let's go ahead and wrap things up. You're winding down your career. Could you just tell people about, you know, this is, you know, you've got a fight coming up, and you told me off air that you didn't really want to pipe the fight as much, but as you wind down your career, what are you most looking forward to about retirement? What are you most going to miss about, you know, the fight sport?
What I'm most going to miss about the fight sport, just I will miss fighting on K1 shows, because there was nothing bigger than fighting on a K1 show. You know, it was as close as what you're going to get to fighting in Vegas on a Mayweather card. You know, it was just unbelievable. So I will definitely miss that. And you know, lots of people don't know, the K1 fighters are treated like gods in Japan. You know, it was commonplace to take a train to the city and we get mobbed by fans wanting autographs. So I'll definitely miss that. But looking forward, it's better late than never. But I'm studying now,
mm-hmm.
and I still enjoy training. I have a big fight coming up on Sunday, in fact, for the IBF Pacific title, which, if I win, gives me a top 10 ranking in the IBF. So it's a big fight, but I'm more challenged now by the studies I'm doing. It's something that I'm enjoying it. It's something that I've left for late in my life, but I'm enjoying it. And I would like to, but the goals I've set for myself is, you know, hopefully to go to university and finish my studies.
Nice. Well, thank you very much for your time. I'm just going to finish this with one last question. If there's one thing that you wanted to tell people, is the most important thing about your time with Mike Bernardo, what would you say it is? For people who had never met him before, you know, what would you say would be, this would be the one thing you would want them to know about Mike?
Mike, it's a difficult one, but he was just, you know, I don't want to sound like a record and just say all these nice and wonderful things about him, but he really was like this. What I would say is, in the ring, he's so well known for his knockouts. You know, his knockout reels of knockouts that he had in his fight career. But he was just such a soft-hearted person. I think that's how I will remember him, and that's the amazing thing. He was this unbelievable fighter and puncher in the ring. But if you met him in person, he was just the most soft-hearted person you're ever gonna meet. It was a dichotomy, you know. you get this fighter, and then you get this, when you meet him in person, he's a soft person who easily will shed a tear easily, you know. That's how I'll remember Michael Bernardo. And, you know, I hope, I'm sure, you know, he has already left the legacy, and I hope people remember, you know, remember that, and remember his highlight reel, the highlights in his career.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time, Virgil. I'll let you get back to your day. Good luck this weekend, my man. And thanks, to all the people out there, you know, who've been putting up the, you know, tweeting and saying, you know, how they feel about Mike Bernardo. Definitely good to hear that. Good to see that other people were influenced by his life, you know, Ray Seffel and so on. So thanks again for the interview, and God bless everybody.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks so much.